It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot. He might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility. You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Try again.
The Medium Fundamental.
This is The Life Without Matt Bonner tonight. I am Chris Ron. I appreciate you joining us for the show inside the TD Garden ahead of Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals as the Bruins and Blues will play a winner-take-all game number 7. First time since 1984 that there's been a Game 7 played in Boston. And, of course, the Bruins won Game 7 in 2011 to win the Stanley Cup, but that was out in Vancouver. This segment of the show presented by the Loudoun Country Club. Closer than you think, check out loudouncc.com for more information and to book a tee time at the Loudoun Country Club. There's nothing better than a Game 7, period. But a Game 7 to decide a championship, that's something that you wait at sometimes a lifetime to see. But that's what folks will see inside the TD Garden here tomorrow night. The Boston Bruins, they have really found themselves in games 5 and 6. Game 5, they were pleased with the way they played. Game 6, of course, pretty dominant outside of a start where St. Louis was strong and the Bruins' Tuukka Rask was able to keep them at bay. Coverage of the Stanley Cup Finals on WKXL presented by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Also, special thank yous to Orange Leaf Concord, as well as Concord Hospital, the Hampshire Healthcare Association, the Spradling Group, and Douglas Leonard and Garvey. Of course, the Bruins have already played a Game 7 here this season. That was a win over Toronto in the first round. They've played big games on the road, at home. They've seen pretty much everything there is to see. They know everything there is to know about the St. Louis Blues at this point as well. Patrice Bergeron, one of the Boston Bruins, one of that core group of five that was in Game 7 back in 2011. And defeating the Vancouver Canucks, and he talks about what the Bruins need to do in Game 7 here inside the TD Garden on Wednesday night.
Well, I think you know what's at stake, so it'd be hard to tell the guys that. I mean, I think you have to bring a simple game, and it's all about details tomorrow. But I really think about, you know, focusing today and being in the moment and enjoying, you know, every second of it. That I think is also important.
Patrice Bergeron right there. Also had an opportunity to catch up with the Bruins' Charlie Coyle.
What does the mindset have to be for you guys at the start of Game 7 with all the emotion, intensity? How do you find your game early on?
We just do what we do. We got to come in focused, ready to go. Both teams are obviously going to be hurried up, jacked up to go. So it's going to be, I think, pretty emotional at the start. It's about playing a game, staying within ourselves, not forcing things. Just a very simple way to start. And we do that, put that puck behind him, go to work, and get support everywhere. Just the little things. So I think teams does little things and outworks is gonna come out.
Berg, you talked about playing a simple game. And is that what you guys have been doing in your view in games 5 and 6 where you've had success, or do you have to simplify things more given the moment and not, you know, make, you know, tough plays, but make smart plays. You mentioned kind of getting the puck behind the D and generating the forecheck.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to play safe. Safe is death, you know. You want to play smart, but simple right from the start. You don't want to turn a puck over at the blue line to make them transition easier, and that's what they feed into. They're good at that. They have skilled guys who can do that. Simple's the way to go. When we played simple, we all four lines go. All four lines get us some sort of momentum, and we just go shift by shift doing that, and we can wear them down. It's when we get away from that and kind of reckon we can fall into trouble.
Charlie Coyle, one of a group of individuals who grew up rooting for the Bruins. He talked about where he was in 2011 and the excitement of seeing the Bruins win the Cup, and now how awesome it is to be playing with Z, Marchand, and Bergeron, a chance to win a championship here in Boston in a game number 7. Noel Achari, another guy, grew up watching the Bruins down in Rhode Island, and I talked with him.
You play all year to fight for home ice, and you have your fans supporting you. It's going to be loud in here, and that's that extra boost that you need. I mean, they're going to be, you have everyone in New England is rooting for you, and it's just a special time. And again, game seven, Stanley Cup, not more, much more you can ask for.
What's the mindset have to be like for you guys to have a success in game seven with all the emotion that's going into it, knowing what it means and so forth?
We got to make sure we have a good start. That's our main focus right now, is making sure we come out strong. It's going to be an emotional game out there. It's going to be loud. We got to make sure we're focused, ready, have the right mindset, and just make sure first take care of the first 10 minutes and then let the game settle down a bit and then go from there.
Last two games, three out of the last four, the Bruins have been the better team. What do you take from that? Do you feel like there is a momentum that you guys have found your game, have been able to get a little more better forecheck going and to have stirred things up a bit?
Yeah, I think our skating game has gotten better over the series, and we need to continue that and make sure we're good on the forecheck, like you said. I mean, that's a big part of our game, is getting in on the puck first and being strong on it. And like I said, just have that first 10 minutes is huge.
The depth of this team obviously allows you to win hockey games, but when your best players are your best players, like in game six, is that what makes this team special, when you have obviously Marchand and Pastrnak scoring?
Oh, definitely. I mean, when those guys are going, not many teams are going to touch them. They're great players. That line is, I don't think anyone can stop them once they get going. And they're finding their stride at the right time. And, you know, but when you have 20 guys all pulling on the rope and all contributing in one way or another, that's what makes a team special.
What did you learn about this team in the big games that you played so far this year, whether it's 6 and 7 in the Toronto series, the game 6 in this series, and how does that inform you going into this game 7?
A lot of character in this locker room, and you know, it starts with game 1 here in the Stanley Cup Finals, where we're down 2-0, come back and win 3-2. I think that testament to our character in the locker room, not never say die, and just being able to never being out of a game. So I think the biggest thing for us is just the character in this locker room.
Noel Chari right there. Joachim Nordstrom is another individual who's had a really strong playoff for the Bruins, and I talked with him about the challenge for the Bruins in game number 7.
Exciting. You know, we want to obviously go out and play our game and not look too far ahead, but we know what's at stake, and you know, our fans are going to be loud and supporting us, so obviously we want to do this for them.
What does the mindset have to be for you guys in a game 7? Bergie mentioned you want to take it all in, you want to embrace it and play a simple game. What do you feel like the appropriate mindset has to be for this game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals?
You know, we don't want to change too much. We know what's been working for us, especially last two games. Obviously didn't win game 5 here in our building, but I think that's maybe that was a little bit of a turning point where we got back to our game, played our strengths, and you know, it's big. It's a lot of, you know, talk on the city and around the news and everything, but once you come to the rink, you know, you got to try to focus on what you can do. You know, it's in the end, it's hockey that we're going to play, so don't change too much. And, you know, you might never get a chance like this again, so you got to make the most out of it.
Do you feel like you have momentum going into, you know, game 7, given, as you referenced, you thought you'll play the Blues in game 5 and obviously in game 6 in terms of the scoreboard?
Yeah, I think, you know, we can obviously bring the momentum from last game, but then again, every game is a new game. You can't really think too much about what we've done before. I got to come in with a fresh mindset on the task that we have ahead of us.
You're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner here inside the TD Garden. Of course, to get to Game 7, Bruins needed to win a Game 6 in St. Louis. We will talk about that, as well as the Bruins' loss here in Game 5, leading up to this big Game 7 inside the TD Garden. You're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, this segment of the show presented by the Loudoun Country Club. And as mentioned before, special thank yous to the Concord Youth Hockey Association for sponsoring our coverage of the Stanley Cup Finals. It's so much fun to bring you all the interviews and reaction to what has been a truly historic Stanley Cup Finals.
This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. Coverage of the 2019 Stanley Cup Finals here on the program is presented by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Also, big thank yous to Orange Leaf Concord, the Concord Hospital, as well as the New Hampshire Healthcare Association, Douglas Leonard and Garvey,
and the Spradlin Group. The Bruins will play a Game 7. Stanley Cup Finals will be inside the TD Garden on Wednesday. Game time a little after 8 o'clock, as this is going to be a phenomenal conclusion to what has been an amazing back-and-forth series that has had everything that you could possibly want in it. It has been remarkable to watch, to cover, as the Boston Bruins won in St. Louis and punched their ticket to a Game 7 with a 5-1 victory over the St. Louis Blues. Here is Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy and the Bruins power play getting things started with a 5-on-3 tally, a beautiful shot from Brad Marchand that went up high on Binnington, who was moving from side to side.
So we're not going to turn down hits where they're not going to chase them. We took advantage of one of theirs from behind to get on the power play, scored a goal, so that got us going in the right direction.
Tuukka Rask's play in the first period was unbelievable. He was so focused, solid, and his movements were sharp and concise down low, making tremendous save after tremendous save. The biggest save of the game, most memorable save, came in the second period of play, and it was actually Charlie McAvoy who made the initial save on a puck that was in midair. He's able to bat it away and onto the back of Rask. Rask actually felt the puck on his back, put his glove behind him, and tried to cradle it while moving away from the net. While he did so, the puck kind of fell out to the side. He was out of the net, but the Bruins had stopped a sure goal. Here's Charlie McAvoy on Rask's overall play.
He's our best player. He has been all playoffs. All year season, we know that we need plays like that to the best of his ability. When we do our jobs in front of him, we got to help him out. He's going to be there.
Here is Bruins alternate captain and forward Patrice Bergeron talking about the team relying on its experience to stave off elimination in Game 6 in St. Louis.
Of course you rely on your experience in these games, and you need to know what's coming. Obviously we expected a big start from them, and I thought we managed that pretty well, and getting that first goal was huge.
So Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals inside the TD Garden. I talked to Noel Chari about this matchup, about Chara going down. Of course, he came back and played in Game 5, 6, and now, of course, expected to play in Game 7 as well. He's been amazing, led this group in an incredible way. Here's Noel Chari on the Bruins in a Game 7.
You know, they're a strong physical team, and we want to match that, and we're a fast-skating team, so we want to try and outskate them. But, again, everyone in here has got the right mentality and knows what it takes to win.
This series, this postseason, has had its ups and downs. How do you not ride the waves of the emotional high after a Game 3? You win 7-2, and you think, okay, maybe this is going to be a little easier than we expected. Game 4, you lose, and it's like, oh, you're going down again. How do you maintain that perspective and get your best performance in this game?
We have the next mentality. Like, after that game's done, it's done with, nothing you can do about it, and you're just going to move on. And next shift, next play, we always have that next mentality, like I said, and we just kind of forget it's in the past. So, like, either celebrate or just kind of get it out of the way that night and then move on to the next day and just kind of go from there.
Do you feel like this series, as the numbers indicate, is even at 2-2, or do you feel like the Bruins do have a bit of an edge, 2-3 at home, and it seems like this team has a little bit more in terms of depth?
Two good teams, and we're here for a reason, and 2-2 series, I mean, like you said, it's best of three now. We have home ice advantage, and we've fought for that all year to have good record so that if we came in this, we have home ice advantage, so I think we have probably a slight advantage in that, but it could go either way. But like you said, I think we have depth, and I think we're ready for anything.
One of the reasons I think your line has been so effective is you have been able to generate a forecheck. You've chipped pucks in, and you've hit their D. Their D may be big, but anybody is susceptible to make mistakes under pressure. Do you feel like the forwards as a whole kind of need to collectively get pucks in and start doing to their D what they're doing to yours?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a big point for us, is to get pucks in and be quick on the forecheck and kind of force turnovers, and that's where we're successful. And if every line's doing that, I think we'll be fine. I mean, it's the more time we're in the O zone, the less time we're in the D zone, so simple as that.
How do you turn the Chara injury, which obviously was terrible to watch, and you guys feel for him and his leadership is so significant, but how do you turn that into a positive? I know it's the Stanley Cup Finals, and that's first and foremost. There's not really any motivating factors and such, but does it add a little bit extra when you see your captain go down that way?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, he's like you said, he's our captain, he's our leader, and we all want to pick it up for him. And again, I don't know what his situation is when he could be back. I mean, it's going to be tough to tell that guy, no, he can't play Stanley Cup Finals. But, I mean, everyone takes a little more upon themselves and kind of pushes themselves a little more just to, for him, because he went down like that.
Final thing, I mean, as a guy who is from this area, from Rhode Island, playing in the Stanley Cup Finals, something you dreamed as dreamed about as a kid, how does the actuality of being here compare to what the dream was, and what has it been like to have the support of being a guy from here on the Bruins?
You know, I mean, like you said, it was dream come true, and I mean, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. You're here, you're in the moment, you want to be in the moment, and you don't want to miss this opportunity because you never know if it'll happen again. So you just kind of take it with a grain of salt. I mean, you want to just kind of, I don't know, take it all in, but at the same time, you don't want to look past anything and miss this opportunity.
No, thanks a lot.
Of course, Game 5 led to Game 6, and for the Boston Bruins, there was extreme disappointment in that contest. First, you know, and they weren't able to score despite dominating early in the contest. And second, the non-call, which involved Nolichari, who was clearly taken down with a slew foot, a trip, and went down on the ice. It was difficult to see from my vantage point. We didn't really get a replay on it either, what had taken place, but he went down. Looked like a stick had hit him up high. It ended up being his stick that had hit him on that particular play. Non-call in a 1-0 hockey game, and a couple seconds later, with Vachari on the ice, the puck's in the back of the net. The Bruins are down 2-0. Jake DeBrusk would score late, but there was a bad taste in the mouths of a lot of individuals across the hockey world, and in particular in Boston, about what took place. I talked with the Bruins' Tuukka Rask about that game.
Yeah, Tuukka, your initial reflections on Game 5, what took place out there tonight?
Played good. Good enough to win. You know, just kind of a tough minute, start the second there, tough 2 minutes, whatever, and they got the lead. But, you know, we battled back and, yeah, played good enough to win.
What would you think about the Achari non-call? He's taken down. Obviously, a goal comes right after that. That ends up being the game winner.
What did you think about it?
I don't think taken down with a high stick.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like a chipping, probably. But, yeah, tripping, you know. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's... Things happen quick. It doesn't help to complain about it afterwards, but, you know, I mean, it sucks that it was kind of a deciding play of the game, you know, so, yeah. You know, he went down hard, you know, kind of, the guy kind of came from behind and took his legs out, and, you know, he was laying there for a second, so, you know, just trying to, you know, focus on the play, what's going to happen, and then, you know, they get a quick 2-on-1 there, Torrey makes a play, and, you know, it bounces back to his stick and it's in the net. So just a really, really quick, you know, events there. But, you know, definitely, you know, just kind of, I think, shock everybody.
Do you find yourself surprised to be in this position down 3-2, or did you feel it would be this type of series where you'd have to battle to the end?
Oh, definitely. You always have to battle to the end. You know, I mean, yeah, you want to make it as easy as possible, but you're playing the finals, so definitely not going to be easy.
Did you think that perhaps at the start of the game, you guys could have, if you had potted a couple there, may have changed the trajectory, obviously?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I thought we played good. We put pressure on him, created some chances, just didn't get one, but we stuck with it. You know, like I said, in the second period started off, there was like a, whatever, minute or 2 minutes, mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, we lost our focus, and then that's all it takes sometimes, you know. So, but definitely, we started off good enough to, you know, get the lead.
Do you feel like there's a need to bounce back or find yourselves going into Game 6, or do you like where the team is at, the way that you're playing, or do things need to be shored up?
Well, I thought, you know, I mean, obviously there's something to fix every game,
right.
But I thought we played good enough, you know, to win today. Just didn't go our way. I mean, yeah, without that, you know, maybe a couple odd man rushes in that 1 minute, it was a, you know, heck of a game. So, you know, I guess we're trying to be perfect next.
David Perron scored the game winner for the Blues in game number 5.
Just talk about what it's like for you to be one win away from the Stanley Cup. How does a player kind of process how close you are, but you still have to get that win?
Oh, it's awesome. I think that we put ourselves in a good spot. Obviously, a gutsy effort, a gutsy win. They played, they pushed hard, and it wasn't our best performance, but we also had good minutes at time. They just had a lot of shot, a lot of attempts on net, and yeah, like we've shown that we can dictate the play too. So we're going to have to do that next game to win.
Yeah, what does it mean to you that you took their best here tonight? You didn't have your best performance, and you still won. This is the first game in that series where that's really taken place.
I mean, yeah. Every team so far had made adjustment, and they came back and they dictated the play on each and every win. And tonight was a little bit more them. But our goalie was extremely good, like he's always. Mm-hmm. We have guys step up at the right time. O'Reilly's been huge for us all year. Last two games, probably our best player, and he's awesome to watch right now, and we're going to need more of that.
What did you expect with Chara coming back? Did you think that the building was going to be the way that it was, and how did you withstand that first period where they really had an onslaught?
Yeah, like, big boost for sure. We know how good of a leader he is, and how, like, he's a warrior. We knew it was going to... We had the feeling he was going to play. We knew it was going to create a big spark for his teammates to see him play through that. Really impressive. Like, I got a lot of respect for him and a lot of guys over there. So, but for us right now, it's all about us. It's all about turning the page and blocking out the noise. Be ready for next game.
Why have your forwards been so effective in creating opportunities off of the forecheck? It's obviously what you guys do on a consistent basis, but you've turned them over a lot.
Yeah, for Chara to play through where he's got to play, like, we have to make it difficult for him. We have to put it behind him, hit him when we can, all within the rules, obviously, but it's the same thing for all their other defensemen, excuse me. And we've shown that it's paying off as we go in series. Each round we've gotten better as we went. And again, like, tonight we found a way to win.
Fathing, your group is remarkably opportunistic, where you take advantage of opportunities and you seem to be very calm, cool, collected in big moments of the game. What about your group allows that to take place, whether it's your netminder who came back from...
I think our goalie is composed and calm back there. He makes a lot of saves that are hard, that make it look simple. And our coach is the same thing. He wants us to play with poise, play with confidence. I think guys that have to make plays, little plays to keep pushing the play forward and playing the O zone, are doing it. And we have to keep supporting the puck extremely well. And then our forecheck is able to take over games at time.
In St. Louis, I also have the opportunity to talk to one of the legends of hockey, Brett Hull, who ranks fourth all-time in NHL history in goals scored. He won two cups, not with the Blues, of course, but one with the Stars and one with the Red Wings.
When individuals from my generation think about the St. Louis Blues, they think about Brett Hull, and honored to be joined by him here in St. Louis. What has this meant to, you know, the franchise, to you, to see this club back in the Stanley Cup Finals?
It's really, I mean, it's special. You know, you look at this year and you'd never think we would be here by now, but you look at our fan base and the group of people that back, you'd think we were in the finals every second year. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't think this is our first time in 49 years that we've been in the finals. And that's how awesome it is to play for the St. Louis Blues and the fan base, the season ticket base. It's really special. It's not, you've got the Boston Bruins, right? One of the original six teams, you know. You're always going to have that fan base. You know, but you're looking at a team that, you know, in the Midwest, it's 49 years since they've been to the finals. And really, you look at it and it's like, well, you know, it was kind of a made-up division, right? So yeah. It's very new. But the fans here are second to none.
The fans here in Boston and in St. Louis are so passionate, but so different in that the Boston fans will eat you alive.
Well,
and here
absolutely.
In St. Louis, it feels like it's a lot different. Yeah. How would you describe the fans here? They're not as loud as the Boston fans. They're not as vicious as the Boston fans, but they seem to be just as passionate.
Well, absolutely. And you know, that's the great thing about sports, right? It's each team has their own passionate fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think about Boston, you know, and then you can go to the Philly, right? And Philly fans are Philly fans. But, yeah, it's everyone's different. And it's obviously different to be a Bruins fan to a Blues fan. But the pride and the loyalty to the Blues and their fans is second to none. As great as the Bruins fans, the Blues fans are just as great.
You had the innate ability to score unlike just about any player that I've seen.
Right.
And it is so difficult to do that in hockey. A lot of guys don't like to talk about scoring. But for you, how were you able to do it? And what led to the continued success you had through the course of your career?
Well, I woke up every day scared to death I'd never score again. So I had an inner drive that I had to score. You know, whether we won, whether we lost, it didn't make any difference to me, because if we lost, it was like, well, I didn't score, so it made, you know, we could have won. And then if it was a 2-1 game and I scored, I'd be like, well, if I got another one, well, it would have made the game easier for us to win. So I loved doing it. I loved the roar of the crowd, and I loved the silence of the visiting crowd.
You had the ability to score the wrist shot, slap shot. You'd get in the front of the net and get dirty goals, too. How about the mental side of it, though? You had the ability, but is there a mental side that plays as much as the physical?
You hit it dead on the nose, and it's all mental. You had, and I try to tell these guys, you have to do whatever it takes to score a goal. If you get into a five-game scoring slump, just go and jump into the net. Do something that you have to be able to make sure that you can score a goal. You have to do something to score a goal. And that's the whole mentality about it. It's all mental.
Final thing, it's in scoring, though, do you have to, is your mind clear? Like, do you have to be clear, or can you press? Where do you have to be mentally in order to make sure that you're getting, you know, the most out of your ability? Because guys will talk a lot about, you know, choking up on the stick too much, pressing a little bit too much, trying to make it happen.
I'm the guy, and I believe you have to be scared to death. You have to be scared to death that you'll never score another goal. And that makes you go, and your desire to score leads right from there. And that's to me, and then you do whatever it takes to score. And that's what it is to me. It was like, there's nothing more fun in the world than scoring a goal, especially now, Stanley Cup Finals, to score a goal, and you know the whole world's watching you. It's the greatest feeling in the world.
Brett, thanks a lot.
Thank you, buddy.
That is the Golden Brett Hull, joining us here on The Life with Matt Bonner. Again, coverage of the Stanley Cup Finals presented by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Thanks so much to them for their support. As this is The Life with Matt Bonner on KXL, the segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. In return, conversation with Rob Gronkowski about retirement. We talked to Gronk's dad about how four Gronkowski brothers made it into the NFL. Jackie Bradley Jr. on the Red Sox, and former Fisher Cat Travis d'Arnaud, who has found a home with the Tampa Bay Rays. That's all when we return here on The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us for the program. Again, you're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner and this segment of the show presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. This segment of the program presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. More information, visit prescription-center.com. We're going to do a little football and baseball in this final segment of the program after talking a lot of hockey here on the show. Bruins Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals on Wednesday inside TD Garden. Certainly a lot of excitement about that, and a lot of excitement as well about the Patriots' upcoming season. But it's going to be one that is going to be without Rob Gronkowski, who announced his retirement. He had his annual pro camp event down in Woburn, Massachusetts, and I'm trying to talk with Gronk as he went and got his Super Bowl ring and then was at the camp on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, it was great to be back with my teammates and to see them all again, high five, take pictures with them, and most importantly, be celebrating for a great reason, and that was the winning of the Super Bowl. And we got I got my third ring, and just Mr. Kraft and his hospitality at his house was just first class, and he does a great job, and very thankful for him having not just myself, but the whole team to have a get together like that. So all three parties been to, all three ring parties, and all three were great.
How's that ring rate with the other ones?
I mean, the rates is the biggest, baddest one.
What are the biggest takeaways that you hope the kids have here at the camp, and what do you hope to instill in them about who you are as an individual?
Just bringing out the energy, and not just myself, but also within them. Just to be running around freely, enjoying the time out here, learning football, too, at the same time, learning how to work together. I mean, you play the games at the end. You got to work together. To come together so you can beat the other team, and just most importantly, coming out too and having fun.
How are you enjoying retirement so far?
Yes, it's good, man. Just it's good. Just doing things. I mean, it still feels like off season, you know, because it's just normal off season still. But it's great coming out here, keeping the camp going, continuing the camp, continuing the buzz off, doing all the good stuff out there still, which is fun.
Do you get the itch at all, or are you totally totally comfortable with your decision.
That's why I'm out here. I got the itch, so I had to come back out, play some QB to the little kids.
The Gronkowski family, to me, is amazing. To have four kids play in the NFL, and as a parent of young kids and in sports, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit to Gordy Gronkowski, who is Papa Gronk, about how he did it. How do you get four kids in the NFL?
Just what's it like for you to see, you know, your family, your four sons who played the NFL out here doing an event like this?
Oh, it's phenomenal. They had a great run as a family. I can't ask for anything else. I had a fantastic life, very blessed in that. But to see them, they got it. They give back to the kids and that. And see them put smiles on the kids' faces, it's just a phenomenal feeling as a dad.
It's been said that having four kids play in the NFL, there's a better chance of you winning the lottery twice than that taking place. How did you do it? How did you create this, the culture and environment? Obviously, genetics are a big part of it, but how did you create an environment where four of your sons play in the NFL?
Well, it all started in the weight room. I played ball in that. I knew how to get them there. My whole goal was just to get them scholarships to college. So I didn't have to pay for college. Anything else as a bonus. So once I started, my first guy didn't want nothing to do with the weight room. I said, hey, if you want to get there, I'll show you the way, but you got to start in eighth grade. And that's why I started them with weights and everything. Nothing heavy, and just showed them form and running skills and all that. And then my first guy didn't really want anything to do with it. And then my second guy did. And then once he started getting bigger, stronger, faster, then my other guy, the older guy, said, hey, I want part of it. And then he got involved. And then it was just like, it was like a culture in the family. Everybody was trying to outdo everybody and that, and they just went downstairs. I just made sure they were doing all the proper form and everything else. And it was great, the competition level and that, and it just took them to the next level and everything, because they were always competing against each other, but it helped them compete when they got out in the real world.
Yeah, everybody always looks at Rob, but without his brothers, it's difficult to see if there would be a Rob, right? Because The big brothers obviously pushed him, and he saw what they were doing and wanted to compete against them initially and be better. So how much do you think the brothers contributed to Rob's success, and would Rob have been who he is without his brothers pushing him?
Yeah, no doubt about that. It's funny because they all used to, you know, beat up Rob all the time. I mean, Rob was the wise guy. They always would beat him up and toughen him up. And then as soon as they would beat him up, Rob would get back up there and punch him in the head again or whatever. Then they all start all over again. But the brawls, and it was one good brawl a day. Yeah. So it definitely toughened him up, you know, having older brothers and that, and being a wise guy the way he was, you know. So they used to give him these Charlie horses, unbelievable. I don't know how he ever got up from them, you know. But yeah, it definitely toughened him up having older brothers.
When did you notice what Rob had? Because Rob is a unique individual in the way that he is, you know, so competitive, but also, you know, has the ability to be fun, to push things beyond him, and this incredible ability and hands to catch the football, run, and all these individual talents. When did you notice that he had something that was pretty special?
Well, they all had something special, and I could notice it because I did a lot of coaching in hockey and mm-hmm. baseball and that, and they all had special talents in it. Rob just had he was just a little more, how would you say it, a little more crazier, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit more, taking more risk in that than the other guys did in that. But I noticed it right away. I mean, you notice it when they're young and they're fifth or, you know, 5 years old, 6 years old and that. You can notice that they're way ahead of everybody else, and it's just to take the talents to the next level. But it was great, though, because they all did great in school, too. That was always our number one thing, was schooling and that. And they all did great in school, which no one knows. Everybody thinks, you know, like Rob, just because he likes to go out and have some fun here and there, that he's just a big meathead. But they had no idea how smart he is, that he was on the honor roll. And he actually could have went to Harvard if he wanted to. So that's the thing that no one ever sees about the whole family and everything. So
that's a really good point, because in interviewing him and being around him over the years, he is very good at, you know, taking in questions, processing, and giving, you know, the appropriate answer for that time. And he is pretty smart, and there is that aspect of things as well. On the business side, all of you guys understand that as well in terms of your family.
Right, exactly. And we are very business-minded. Between all of us now, I think we have like 8 different companies out there, and they're all doing very well. And it does help, you know, having Rob out. each kid
the
is
the front guy,
as a front guy. It's nice to have our name because of the four played in the NFL, and my other son played professional baseball for 6 years. So it's good to have the name to go along with it, and when we say something in the fitness business and that, people listen because how far they made it and everything, so and the way we look and the way we present ourselves, and we believe in it. That's what we believe in.
Final thing, each parent, when they look at their kids, may see a certain skill and ability and question the appropriate way to get them where you think they can go. How did you go about doing that? Kind of the pushing versus the, you know, making sure that they were having fun, making sure that the coaches were, treating them the way that you wanted them to be treated. How did you go about trying to make sure that there was, the appropriate pushing, opportunity, and parenting?
First of all, I never pushed the kids. If they didn't want to do it, that was it. And I told them that, hey, it might not be for you. And I, like my first son I told you about, I didn't force him, I didn't push him. Hey, if that's the way you want to go, that's it. I mean, where we pushed him was the schooling. Mm-hmm. Hey, get to school, that's everything, and get to college. That was our main goal as parents, as me and my ex went through it on that. So other than that, it just was, like I said, they pushed themselves, and they all tried to be better than each other. One would get a, 3.8 at college, the other one had to get a 4.0, and so it was just constant competition between them. But the thing is, parents, they think they have to push them and have to drive them. You direct them, but you don't push them. Because as soon as you start pushing, they're not going to like it,
They got to have fun.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. And that's what I told them. My philosophy was live life to the fullest every day because you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. So that's what I did, I just said, hey, have fun. And just, when you stop having fun, then that's when it's not supposed to be, take another path, go down another road and do something else. Cool. Life's too short.
Papa Gronk right there, Gordy Gronkowski here on The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. We'll switch gears to baseball right now, and the Red Sox dropped 3 out of 4 to the Tampa Bay Rays, and one thing was clear after this weekend, and that's the Rays are a better baseball team than the Boston Red Sox right now. It's a huge opportunity for the Red Sox to get back into things on their home field, but they find themselves continuing to trail both the Rays and the Yankees in the American League East, where those two teams are in a flat-footed tie for first place in the division with records of 40-24. Red Sox are now 7 games behind those two squads, and 1 game behind the Texas Rangers, who come in starting tonight here on Monday for that final wild card spot, and a spot taking on either the Rays or the Yankees to play in the division series. I talked with Jackie Bradley Jr. about where this Red Sox team is at this point, and also what about his defensive side of things. Here is Jackie Bradley Jr.
Jackie, I'm just curious, team-wise, your feelings on where the season is right now and where it has been throughout the course of the year. Mitch had said previous that this is more like a baseball season as opposed to last year, which is kind of like a dream season. How would you categorize this year and where the ball club is?
I think we're, like Mitch said, we're in a baseball season. And, we feel like we're not where we want to be right now, but we also know that we're not far from where we want to mm-hmm. be. So we just have to continue to execute, make adjustments, and play together as a team.
I feel like the depth of the team has gotten actually better during this time period. What we've seen with Rafael Devers and how he has expanded into an MVP caliber player, and Chavis coming in as well. Now, how do you feel that's going to help this team moving forward? That you have new weapons, and once everybody else kind of comes around, you guys should be in good position.
We always had them. Right. We didn't have to make any additions or subtractions for the guys. They're just coming into their own.
Right.
It's only going to help our team get better.
I'm curious as to how you think about defensive metrics and if you follow them at all, because it seems like analytics are useful in some aspects of the game, but defensive metrics, I'm not sure how useful they are, particularly in judging a player like you in a ballpark like this, where one athlete may be able to get into left center
where you can't get into left center here because of the fact that there's a big wall there. Do you look at defensive metrics at all, and do you evaluate yourself based upon that type of data?
I don't have to look at it or base myself. I just got to play my game. And the naked eye can show quite a bit if you look at it, if you pay attention to it.
What's the most difficult play for you to make?
I don't know. I feel like I can make the plays that I can make, and I work at them all. So I'm pretty comfortable out there when I need to make a play.
Is that the attitude of a great player as well, where media, myself included, obviously tends to look at the negative side of things? What's the most difficult, like going into the wall, coming in, and so forth? But do you look at it as each play is one that is there that you can make, correct? And how do you set your mind to have success from a defensive perspective, where obviously the offensive side of the game is talked about a lot in terms of the mental side? How does your mind affect the defensive side?
It shouldn't. They're two separate things. So when one's not clicking, hopefully the other one is. That way you can put yourself in a position to be able to help the team out on any given day.
Infielders will talk about that first step being so important for them. Is it the same for you, where that first step is going to determine? You can obviously make up more ground in an infielder, but that first step and being in tune with what's taking place is going to determine whether you make plays or not?
It can, sometimes. Necessarily, sometimes you're not going to make the right first step all the time. Mm-hmm. So you still make plays, but obviously you don't want to make the wrong step too often.
A former New Hampshire Fisher Cat has found his way to the Tampa Bay Rays. Travis d'Arnaud had a big offensive day for the Rays on Saturday as a part of the doubleheader, and caught yesterday as well.
Travis d'Arnaud had a huge day against the Red Sox on Saturday. And talk about coming into this ball club and kind of what the journey's been like for you over the last little bit after a great break-in with the Mets.
It's been a whirlwind this year, going from northeast to southwest to southeast, and then like a week later ending up back in New York playing the Yankees. It was a lot of fun, though. It's something that I wouldn't trade anything for. I learned from lots of years with the Mets, and fortunately now I was able to slow things down a little bit and go out there and remember it's just baseball and have fun and just continue to play.
Yeah, that's the key that a lot of guys will talk about, is when you're trying to impress, a lot of times you're not going to, but if you're able to kind of bring yourself out of the moment and calm yourself down, was that a big key for you here, as you're obviously trying to make an impression, but you have to be yourself in order to do it?
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was just remembering that the importance of a win. It's the biggest thing in this game, regardless of whatever happens to me. It's me going out there and trying to do what I can to help the team win, and just trying to simplify things and just keep it there.
In trying to have the best outcome here possible, it seems like there's a lot of guys that are able to come to the Rays and kind of buy into what they do here and have success in their careers, obviously, move forward. What do you think about this club allows for kind of that comfort amongst this group?
Just the environment, man. I mean, the first day I got here, I was, half asleep from a red eye, and I instantly felt welcomed, instantly. So I felt really comfortable from day one, and I think that plays a major part in playing well, especially when you have it day in and day out and you look forward to coming to the ballpark every day.
It seems like pitching is a big part of what's allowed for this club to be successful this year, and really over the long term, where the roster may turn over, but the team is pretty successful in the way Charlie Morton has pitched this year, Blake Snell on the mound here on Sunday, and Glasnow is good, obviously, until he got hurt, and the opener as well. What do you think allows for the pitchers to have success from your perspective, and what do you look at moving forward in regards to their possible success?
This organization's just done a great job of building confidence on the mound, finding the exact type of pitchers that they want. Snide's doing a great job of keeping everyone locked in a great mood all the time. I mean, that guy can tell when someone's down on the mound, and he's able to pick him back up within an instant. I hear him talk to all the guys. I'm like, damn, this guy gets it. He knows how to make everyone feel good and get him back locked in, if no matter if they threw 10 balls in a row or freaking walked home a big run. He locks him back in and gets him ready to go.
That is Travis d'Arnaud. This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us for the show. This segment of the program presented by the Prescription Center.